Blog Talk Radio.
It loud. Welcome to Eerie House, everyone. It's Crazy Dale K from Spook Show, and I am so excited and pleased. We have a great guest. I'm ready to jump in feet first. An associate of mine, Scott Essman, turned me on to this wonderful music video that's coming out, and the artist, Robbie Jeanette, has agreed to join me here in Eerie House. Welcome, Robbie.
Hey. Thank you very much. How you doing?
I am doing great, especially since you're here.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be so welcome, and I'm glad you dug the video, man. I'm really excited to be here to talk about it.
It was put together very, very well. It's neat because it tells a story. I'll be frank with you. I was not aware of you until I saw this, and right away I'm like, this guy's a brilliant musician. As I read and learned more, I found out that I'm going to ask you a little bit about your history as a musician. So share with the audience, if you would. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm known primarily as a piano player, but I also play all the instruments, piano, guitar, bass, drums, and sing. And I have had a lot of different incarnations of my music and tried out a lot of different styles and found a lot of freedom in expressing myself that way. And this concept for this video was something that wasn't like anything that I'd done before, but it was something that as soon as I had the idea, the plot, just almost like I could picture it in my head. And I actually just sat on it because it didn't seem like it was something that I could pull off at the time. And then literally out of the blue, the day David Bowie died, I was really affected a lot more than I thought I would be, and ended up making phone calls. And there's a director that I had worked with, Andrew Aitman, who directed this video. And he really helped me to bring this vision to life and to be able to manifest art and take a song that I had and make the song more meaningful in the process feels like a great victory and success in itself. And now I just want to get it seen out there by everybody in the world, you know?
Oh, and you clearly have shown some acting skills as well. I mean, to me, it looked like something, you know, big time major label record quality stuff. And I just fell in love with it when Scott brought it to me. I'm like, oh yeah, I've got to push this because I want to share it with not only the horror host community, which, you know, Eerie House is all about, but
for sure,
but the genre in general. I think horror fans can appreciate the song, the video, and how it all works together.
Yeah, man. And, you know, I'm not a total gore guy, you know, the Saw movies and all that kind of stuff. It's a little bit the horror porn. And this is more of an elegant malevolence, to use a word that gets bandied about. And I like that. I like that, you know, it's more in the Lestat style than, you know, I'm going to show you the ripping of the neck open and, you know, stuff. So a little demure, but yet still that little spark is there, you know?
Well, I'm glad you said that because one of the things about Eerie House is we're more enamored of the classic, the old, you know, my general feeling, if it's black and white, it's better. Back in those days, the horror and the gore was more implied. And as Alfred Hitchcock once said, there's nothing I can show on film that your imagination can't make better.
Right.
In that spirit, I think that's one of the reasons I think I liked your video so much, because it doesn't have the unnecessary gore. It doesn't have the shock value, and it doesn't need it.
Right. You know, the shock value does come from, you know, you're wondering, you know, what this character is about and why did he do this and who was she? You know, I like when there's questions that you're left with. And I think that, you know, turning to songs themselves, the best songs leave a place for you to imagineer your life or yourself into it. You know, when you hear Elton John sing about your song, how wonderful life is because you're in the world, that you and your could be anybody, your dog, your parent, your lover, your deity, and it leaves it open so you can fit into the story. So when you're left with as much openness rather than, you know, something that's just so specific in the lyrics that it doesn't give you any room to come in and give it a hug, you know, or a bite on the neck, just a nibble.
So how did this all, you mentioned, you know, a little bit about the beginning of putting this together, but how did the video itself come together? Where did you find the actress, production people?
Andrew, I got to give him credit, man. He is the kind of guy as a director and producer that can pull it all together. He made it easy as a process, which was really wonderful for me. It's like working with the producer in a studio, and they make it a pleasure to come to, you know, to work, and you're doing creative stuff. And he had great makeup people. He had great people to set everything up and the lights and the great editor and, you know, anything that we wanted to create as an image. He had a bunch of options for ways we could do it, like the shots where I'm seemingly, you know, floating down the aisle. We had to work to make it happen and make it look effortless and natural. And so I have to give him credit for helping find all those people. And then we did a casting call for the lead actress. And when Brittany walked in, we just kind of knew that was her. You know, we were, I don't want to say looking for our victim, but in the sense, you know, she gets empowered. towards the end of the video anyway. So, you know, it was, we were just looking for somebody that we felt had a look, and, she had actually just moved out to California from the East Coast, I think months before. So she was kind of new to town and was totally into it and excited. And, I think she did a great job and it came out great.
So obviously the song came first and then you kind of storyboarded the idea for the video and all the elements came together.
It's such a simple plot. So, you know, the thinking of it was like, you know, it almost just envisioned itself because it's just one scene and one thing happening. But I got to say that the ending, which, you know, comes as a little bit of a surprise. When I first met Andrew for dinner to sit and kind of whiteboard and talk and make notes and stuff like that, that idea had popped into my head because up until then it just kind of ended, and this made it end with a nice little pop, and also opened the possibility of a sequel. So I'd like to get there someday and someday soon. And I have a song and a concept, and, you know, it would be a little more elaborate and just a little bit darker, perhaps.
We'll be anxiously awaiting, because this is just a taste of some more that may come. This is very exciting. I like the feel of the video. It's a love story, obviously.
Yes.
With a little darkness with the vampire. I like that it almost seems black and white. It's almost sepia tone. Which gives it an age and a feel to it.
Yeah. And I'll tell you that we got to the end of the process and then went through what is supposed to be the official, like, the colorization process. And when we did that, something was lost, and I just kept going back to our last edit with the quote-unquote temporary coloring, and I said, you know what, I don't want to mess with this. This is great, and that's exactly what it was. And, you know, it's funny. Sometimes it just happens that way. You know, it happens in mixing songs and in music, and it happens in movies. You just wind up where you're just like, why go any further? This is it. I feel this. This is what I want, you know?
Yeah. You know, I'm not as knowledgeable, and the great irony in that is I used to have a disc jockey career in nightclubs and weddings and so forth for a long time in the 80s and the 90s. I was fortunate enough to make a living doing something I enjoyed, and I got paid to drink and act like an idiot, and I was pretty good at both, but I've always understood how important music is. I discussed it on this show many times in the past. How important music is to any kind of video presentation, whether it's a full-length movie. It's obviously important to a music video. But there's such an opportunity to express things non-verbally. I mean, the lyrics of the song are important, but the music and the feel is created by the music.
Yeah, and it's funny, the song itself had existed for a little while before the video, and it always had meaning to me, but now that it has this visual to it, it's actually kind of changed the song and the feel of it to me, which is great. It's really a neat thing to have, not a trick to play on myself, but a treat. Trick or treat.
Yeah.
Trick or treat. Yeah, there you go. As you were saying about, wanting to see more, my goal with this video as an artist is to want people to say, if this is this one thing, what else, what else does this guy have? What other music does he have? What other, art does he have? And I think sometimes in order to scratch the surface, you have to draw blood and, trying to get people to take you seriously and to see you as somebody that they want to find out more about. I think you have to go the extra distance, and, that's what Bowie did. And, his absence, I said, oh my gosh, if it all ends tomorrow, did you do it? Did you pull the trigger?
His passing did impact the horror community as well. I mean, one of my former partners, Halloween Jack, was a huge, huge fan of David Bowie. His name, Halloween Jack, comes from the lyrics of David Bowie's piece. And it's no surprise to me that you were equally as moved while putting this together.
Yeah. Bowie was a guy that never defined himself by one thing, one entity, one visual, one style of music, and this constant reinvention and constant evolution, it comes to what I feel is inherent in every great creative person. It's curiosity, and sometimes it's the curiosity to see, can I pull this off? Can I do this? I like that.
It's kind of why I'm here today. We were talking a little bit prior to the show about how Eerie House came to be briefly, and funny that you say that. I've done some research on you. It looks like you played a little bit with Everclear.
I did. I hired to play guitar.
You had your own band, Rabbit Head.
Yeah, that was a hard rock project. I was always known as a piano guy, and I had all these hard rock guitar songs, so I figured, well, I'll create bands to be my guitar rock band. And I still love that stuff. I would love to rock some Rabbit Head someday, but you can't do everything at the same time. Got to focus, and, it lays there ready anytime. Like a cool suit.
David Binkley just said in the chat he must have just watched your video. He thought it was very, very cool, and
awesome.
And it is. I have to ask this because one of the things Eerie House focuses on is the guys who used to put on the old horror shows, the horror hosts and hostesses.
Yep.
What area of the world did you grow up in?
Well, I grew up in South Florida.
I guess I'm talking about teen years.
Yeah, South Florida. I was down in Miami, Fort Lauderdale. So, one of the people that we all knew was Elvira. Everybody who was, she was like such a unique presence, and it wasn't like we had goth culture or, anything like we have today, or vampire culture or whatever. So she was really kind of like a beacon for people who were interested in something a little dark, not too dark, a little sexy, not too sexy, not gory, very, like we're talking about it, more of a classic host. But I got to say, there's also this guy named Big Wilson, and he used to talk in between the movies and breaks on the TV at night, and he'd play a keyboard, and he was this late night guy, and he's not a horror guy, but he was one of these guys where I, as a young musical person, if I stayed up late, I'd be like, wow, there's a guy who just sits between movies and plays keyboards on television. What a cool thing. Can I do that?
Yeah.
Just sit and talk to people. So
I'm wondering if you remember, there was a gentleman, Dr. Paul Bearer. He had a very distinctive voice. You might not be, I have a sneaking suspicion I'm a bit older than you are, And he was a product of, I think, 60s television and maybe into the early 70s.
No, not that before my time.
Yeah.
Yes, but,
and there's a great group called the Peninsula of Horror that focuses on Florida horror hosts. They do a streaming thing once a month. A guy who calls himself Professor Gilman, a friend of ours, and you know, they try to document not only the historical Florida hosts, but the guys that are on the internet today and putting out their shows.
It's interesting that the farther you get down the peninsula, when you really get down to like Miami proper, there was a long time where it, you know, before the internet age, that you were really kind of isolated down there. And if you didn't have, you know, cable or whatever, you were really, it was an isolated scene. I mean, you were almost like in an island sort of way. And bands, when we had bands down there, you'd have to drive 4 hours to Orlando or 11, 12 hours to Atlanta just to be somewhere that almost kind of mattered, you know? So it's interesting because with that isolation, it's a neat petri dish. So a lot of interesting music, like Marilyn Manson came out of there. And back when he was playing clubs and doing all sorts of crazy stuff, it wasn't like every other band was like Manson down there. Everybody was really unique because you had to be because it was our petri dish, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, Florida's interesting. I had my first honeymoon with my first wife down there, and to get to some of the cool places, you do have to do some driving.
Unless you're down, then you're just stuck.
Yeah, well, but it's a beautiful place to be stuck, and I like swampland and things of nature that, you know, the gators and the birds and different animal life down there. It really is a beautiful, beautiful place.
Totally has its zones and its moments. Absolutely.
Yeah. But if you're caught up in the high-speed world of today, it can be a drag being stuck somewhere.
Yep. But if you're in a club and you're watching Marilyn Manson, you know, sodomize a chocolate cow on stage, and, you know, with I guess that's a different kind of vibe. Actually, if anybody remembers, there was a thing called the Impotent Sea Snakes, and they were like total shock rock. Not quite horror, but you pretty much left their shows horrified. And I saw a couple of their legendary Florida shows that I can't repeat on, even on internet radio where you can say anything, I can't repeat. One of those kind of.
I appreciate that because we're kind of PG around here, so I appreciate that.
Of course.
Yeah. We had a discussion just Friday night at a convention I attended. I was lucky enough to moderate a panel about how the shift of horror hosts from television to now the cable and then the internet and what we might look forward to going forward. And we discussed that how the shock value really isn't that necessary. I've been blessed to be around other PG kind of guys for the most part. We like that softer approach, just like your video, Come Down. The song itself, do you recall what was your inspiration or how it came to mind and how the song itself prior to the video, how did that come together?
Oh, well, thanks for asking. Well, I was living with my sister in New York, and I was all set up with my little home recording studio gear in the corner of her living room, and I'd written this song, and it has this bass line that just had this feel to it. And it's interesting because the piano, in a lot of my songs, the piano is the driving instrument, but in this, the bass really kind of moves the song along. And so my sister was in the other room on the phone, and I get very into the process, so I wanted to lay a vocal down, and I figured, well, I'll just lay one down kind of like more whispered and low just to get it down. And after I did that, only simply because she was on the phone in the other room, I listened back and I said, oh my gosh, that's how I'm supposed to sing the song. And it was only a byproduct of that. Who knows, I might have sung it higher or figured that out eventually. But and I recorded it for a demo kind of cassette right at the end of the cassette days, and then re-recorded it officially in the studio for what is now the video. So it actually took the better part of, a decade to come to where it is now, which is pretty cool,
Some of the best things happen that way. You have a thought in the back of your head, and it just slowly evolves into something that finally comes together as a finished piece, just like your video, Come Down.
Well, you know, I think, though, what it's a product of, look, if you can't invest in something or you don't have an entity, a label, a company investing in you, you have to do it kind of on the fly. And we're all in a bit of a DIY world nowadays. But if you're going to do it right, you have to do it right. There's no way to fake it. You can do the best you can. I could have taken my iPhone and done it kind of, but you know, in the end, I figured this was worth doing the right way. And, you know, you have to make it compelling. Nowadays, your art, if it's going to make it out beyond just your own hobby, it's got to be something that at least makes people want to share it and put it out there with their friends, you know? And, it's hard sometimes to find that. I know a lot of artists who are fantastic and they don't have a shiny penny, if you will, you know, and it takes a little longer to maybe get into it and listen to it and absorb it and appreciate the, you know, and let it roll over you and finally hook you and catch you rather than coming up and grabbing you by the shirt collar and saying, hey, you know.
Well, you're so right though about doing work like this in an independent sort of way. I've had experiences on television and radio throughout my life, both professionally and as a volunteer. And just today, it's so much harder. And I think corporate America really has made things different. I was about to say difficult, but let's just say different. For example, I did an all-horror radio show for Halloween about 5-6 years ago. And it was at that point I realized how radio had turned into a pay-to-play kind of an environment. I had to go out and sell ads to make it happen for the show. I'm not a salesman by nature. I've done sales positions in my life, but I had to physically go out and beat the streets to get people to make it happen, and I was lucky enough to do that for a nice little 2-hour show with songs.
Yeah.
And if I do it again, I'd love to use Come Down.
Happy to get it out there. I appreciate that. And I have other music that you know, in a lot of different genres, from Rabbit Head to funky stuff to improvisational piano stuff. I've recorded a bunch of improvisational records under the name Pianarchy, and I'm going to be releasing those within the next year. And they're pretty far out and cool, and it's I feel like I've honed what I think of as this insane style of piano playing into something very digestible and listenable and transportive. And I'm also releasing some covers EPs that I've some songs that I've taken from happy upbeat songs to a little more in this diabolical vein. So I look forward to you checking those out too soon.
You're an interesting guy. The first thing that comes up on YouTube after Come Down is finished is a sort of an instructional you did about learning to play the piano, and I got hooked right away and listened and watched it.
Thank you. It's interesting because I have different entities. So would I rather it go into Nosferatu or something else right after my video? Sure. But if people find out that I've unlocked a lot of the secrets of music and can teach it to people very easily, then that's great too.
And is it true you're also a surfer?
I bodyboard exclusively, and I'm sponsored by a company called The Number Six. They make some of the best bodyboards on the planet, and I've been riding my whole life, and I haven't been competing, but I definitely go out in some big stuff, and I'm not afraid to drop in, you know.
Where are some fun places you've body surfed?
Bodyboarded, body surf. Well,
bodyboarded.
I could body surf, but I've gone to Indonesia, to Bali and Sumbawa. I've gone to Mexico a number of times. I've gone to Costa Rica, Hawaii, Puerto Rico. Not that exciting, but very cool. Have some great friends down in Puerto Rico, Babi Quiñones. But it's interesting. The sport of bodyboarding has kind of been an underdog to surfing, and I love it. And the people in the sport, to me, one of the best cliques of people that I could ever hope to be friends with. And it's an amazing connection with the water and the ocean, and just I always feel 100% better than I did when I paddled out, when I paddled in, you know, full of aloha. It's great.
There really is something magical about being in the water. I'm nowhere near as well traveled as you are, but my current and final wife, we've been together almost 30 years now. We got married on Maui. Perfect.
Wow.
On Kaanapali Beach, and it was very beautiful. On Kaanapali Beach at the time we were there, it was September of 88, there really wasn't big surfing waves there, but there's just something so peaceful. I'm an avid swimmer, always have been. And the water is just so beautiful. You grab some goggles and you see the most amazing fish.
For sure.
They'll come right up to you. I mean, you take a bag of bread and a camera, and you got an underwater camera, and you've got some nice album material there for
your
photo
album.
Well, but,
you know, you being a swimmer and being in the water, or me being a bodyboarder and being in the water, you are part of something that you're actually more connected to than you think, because, like, the human body is made of over 60% water molecules, brain over 70%, and water is a medium. If you have water sitting in a cup and it's still versus the water in the ocean, it's just the water in the ocean's has this energy coming through it in waves. And when you're riding it and you're connected to it, as you are when you're body surfing or bodyboarding, your water molecules align with that of the wave, and you actually are the wave's energy. It is inhabiting your water molecules, because water moves in tandem. And that's, I think,
sure,
the big part of that amazing feeling.
We all start
feeling
out with gills at one point, and life itself began in the water. So real quick, we're out of our regular time. If you'd like to, or just about, I want to leave enough time to play some of Come Down for our listeners, for those that haven't heard it yet, and invite you to stick around for the after show. There's a little... It doesn't go out live, but folks that go back in the archive, if you want to stick around and chat a bit more, I welcome you to join me. So for our listeners, thanks again, Robbie Jeanette, for coming and joining us here in Erie House, and here is Coming Down.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again, Robbie, for joining us, and I want to thank my listeners for listening to Erie House Radio. We'll be back to our regular time next week, Saturday, 6:30 Eastern. Bye-bye.
Maybe I am the question, the answer is you. I am the question.
When we hit the... the non-live portion, for some reason, Blog Talk likes to kick the volume up super high, so sorry about that.
Yeah. No, no problem. So are we in the after show?
Yeah, we are now in the after show, so we could talk about people.
Hey. I was going to say, well, one of the things that that people, I think, assume nowadays, but are probably right about, is that a lot of music that they hear is, if not made by people, in terms of people actually performing the instruments, then auto-tuned or somehow digitally tweaked to kind of a perfected sheen, you know? And I have a big problem with, personally, a lot of, like, auto-tuned vocal harmonies that it's just a little too perfect. You know, the stuff that sounds good because there's live movement between people's harmonies and whatnot, even somebody harmonizing with themselves. So, you know, there's a lot of videos I have up from there's a piano club that I play in called the Valley Ragtime Stomp, where I, you know, delve into a lot of boogie-woogie and standards and stuff that challenges my piano playing and self, which is great. And I've learned a lot from that. But it's a fascinating instrument, the piano. And I think hopefully people can hear in this song that it's actually somebody playing an instrument. It's not, you know, you can't fake a piano part. I guess you can if it's very simple, but if it's more difficult. Well, anyhow, where am I going with this? I'm just rambling.
I don't know, but I'm
show,
listening,
right?
And I'm enjoying it. Earlier you mentioned that, you know, there might be some growth off of this particular video and potentially a sequel type video. If you're looking for inspiration or just something enjoyable to listen to, look up Midnight Syndicate. They specialize in horror music. They've done soundtracks for films. I think they're local to me. I think they're right from here in Ohio. They're absolutely fantastic.
Cool.
I think you'd appreciate their music. There's a lot
I like
of synth, but they're very instrumental. Instrumentally inclined. I'm not going to pretend, nor can I fake any kind of deep knowledge of music in terms of structure and how it's put together. But
right.
I've always had an appreciation for bands like, for example, like the Moody Blues, who have added a lot of orchestral instruments to their rock and roll. I've always been a collector of and an avid listener of film soundtracks because of the feeling that they create. Guys like Bernard, I don't know if any of these names will strike a chord with you, but guys like Bernard Herrmann, you must have heard of John Williams.
But Bernard Herrmann especially, I love his work. And it's the kind of music that I don't try to deconstruct. I just like to listen to and be affected by it, if you will.
Yes.
I had a lot of classical music, too. I have no classical training at all. I'm a self-taught player, so some music I just like to absorb, you know, and if I ever wanted to learn deeply, I could.
You must have, then, what they call an ear.
Well, yes.
You know what I mean? There's some people that just have the ability to absorb and then translate their music without any formal training.
Listen, what I thought, because I don't have formal training. I quit lessons at 14. What I thought was, I have an ear, I'm retaining music, and you either got it or you don't. What I know now is that if you know what you're listening for and you very simply teach yourself the sound of what you're listening for, you hear it, you absorb it, it's everywhere, you can learn. I can look through sheet music books and look at the chord structures and look for new passageways that I haven't seen before, and rarely do I find them because most people write stuff that sounds good. And that's the one criteria. Did it work? You know, guys like Paul McCartney and Elton John, they don't sit down and write notation. They write songs. And it does it sound good? Of course it sounds good, you know? If it doesn't, they rewrite and edit and make it happen. You know, so I'm fascinated by chords and chord structure.
I'm going to ask you an odd question here, but maybe it's not so odd when it plays itself out. Were you good at math in school?
That is a great question, because math and music have a lot in common, and math and rhythm and counting.
You know where
rhythm.
I'm going with this, Ben.
I was decent. I wouldn't say I was going to high-level trigonometry or anything like that, but certainly math came easy on a certain level. Yeah. And I think there's certain mechanics, but you have to give somebody the context of their relationship so they can truly contemplate it and appreciate it and let it go back into their subconscious. You know, it's almost like you're giving structural context to somebody's subconscious, so it does the heavy lifting that they're having to do every time they learn a new song, because all songs fit on the same grid. You know?
Yeah,
and it's fine.
I was very good at mathematics, and I at one point in my life, very early part of my life, I wanted to be a musician, but unfortunately, my parents' feeling was you are not bringing an instrument into this house, period. So I kind of drifted from that. But I found that there is a connection between the basic mathematics, not the theoretical math as much.
Yeah.
I don't think. But the basic precepts is being blessed with a very, very good memory, you're able to retain, like you said, the chords and the structure and the sequences of notes.
Yeah, but
it's not
just that you can retain that. It's if you understand it as this little box of blocks that it is. It's so simple. It's a handful of beans. And honestly, one of the biggest problems is the cognitive disconnect between that and what people have either been told or just assumed and thought their whole lives, that music theory is this giant library